But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We're going to start off this show with how unaffordable America has become, move on to the president's problem with Somalians, and follow all of that up with an update to our ongoing docuseries, How Many Strikes Does It Take to End Pete Hegseth's Career? Let's begin, shall we? What the actual fuck, people? I take a week off for Thanksgiving, and that is when hell decides to break loose. And let's take a moment to talk about the blackest day after Thanksgiving, historically reserved for pitching a tent 5 hours before the store opens to avoid being trampled over all the deals awaiting you. Thoughts and prayers to all of those people who got Target's giant swag bag with 5 sample-sized items from the clearance bin. I guess you should have joined the boycott from Black Friday to Cyber Monday. I know I did. And apparently so do retailers, who for some reason didn't publish their earnings like they always do this year. Instead, we had to hear about how the boycott turned out from credit card companies, because apparently online shoppers are the only shoppers corporations are paying attention to.
Black Friday, look, they're shopping online. $18 billion of online shopping on Black Friday alone. However, when you dig into the numbers a little bit, they don't look quite as great because of the thing that's causing all the gloom and doom, those higher prices right. That you mentioned, right? Average selling prices, according to Salesforce, were 7% higher than last year. 7%, that's more than twice the overall rate of inflation. That's well more than average wages are up. And order volume was down. And Salesforce
also— That means people are taking home less.
Yeah, right? They're spending more, Kate, but right. They're actually getting less. And what's interesting is that Salesforce, they pinned the blame for a lot of this on tariffs, right? Notice they pointed out that price increases really accelerated as the year went by. 6% increase on clothes, 7% on electronics, and 24% on appliances. So you put it all together and yeah, people are spending more money, but that's in part because prices were higher.
And that is the data they decided to showcase after this year's Black Friday weekend. Because the reality is, foot traffic was embarrassingly down over previous years, and online sales were the only numbers worth talking about. That is, if your audience is poorly educated and can't figure out that higher prices causing less purchases means the economy is fucking drowning thanks to Eric's dad's tariffing the fuck out of everything. A fact Don Snorleon woke up from his nap at a very public cabinet meeting to old man rant about.
Food. On every single one of those issues, Mr. President, I think we've made incredible progress. But it would be preposterous to fix every problem caused over the last 4 years in just 10 months.
You know, there's this fake narrative that the Democrats talk about, affordability. They just say the word. It doesn't mean anything to anybody. They just say it. Affordability. The word affordability is a con job by the Democrats. But the word affordability is a Democrat scam. They say it, and then they go on to the next subject. And everyone thinks, oh, they had lower prices. No, they had the worst inflation in the history of our country.
Au contraire, my sleepy dictator tot. Inflation is at 3%, which is higher than it was last year when you weren't occupying the White House. And prices on everything are up by 32% over last year's, thanks to your tariffs, which is pissing off big retailers like Costco, who've seen a drop in sales thanks to those tariffs and are now demanding compensation for their injuries.
Costco is taking the Trump administration to court. The wholesaler is suing to ensure it gets a full refund of the tariffs it paid if the Supreme Court finds the administration's tariffs are unlawful. Costco joins a growing list of major companies who have filed lawsuits regarding the administration's tariffs, including Revlon, Kawasaki, and Bumblebee.
You've got to be a huge piece of shit to piss off Costco, Revlon, Kawasaki, Bumblebee Foods, along with an eyeglass company and a tire business, for starters. These companies have decided, should the jesters on the bogus SCOTUS overturn the tiny-handed griffers' use of the 1977 International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the excuse for the tariffs that have been making life in America unaffordable, and for fuck's sake, let's set the record straight, folks, on how much things actually cost, regardless of whatever sundowning rant Sleepy Dawn traps reporters into listening to.
He said that he's cutting prescription drug prices by 500% to 900%. He said that's something nobody's ever heard of. Well, nobody's ever heard of it because those numbers don't make mathematical sense. He said, again, grocery prices are down. No, they're up. They're up 2.7% year over year as of September, 1.4% from the month he returned to office in January. He said since last January, we've stopped inflation in its tracks. Well, the inflation rate in September, the most recent we had, was 3% year over year. That is the exact same as it was in January. And September was the fifth consecutive month the year over year rate had increased. So it's rising. It hasn't been a stop. He said he inherited the worst inflation in history. No, again, he inherited 3% inflation. Even the peak Biden era inflation, Dana, 9.1% in June 2022, was not close to the all-time record. He said we're now at about $2.50 for gasoline. You can find some stations today where gas is $2.50 or less, but the national average was right around exactly $3. He said his big, beautiful bill included no tax on Social Security. Didn't do that. It temporarily increased the standard deduction for seniors, but didn't fulfill his campaign pledge to completely eliminate tax on Social Security. He said again that he secured over $18 trillion in investment since returning to office in January. That number is about double the number the White House's own website uses.
Damn, these bitches lie so much. They can't even keep it straight. No wonder 74% of Americans, including a hefty dose of Republican voters, are pissed off about how much groceries, housing, and healthcare cost because they can't afford all fucking three at the same time. Forget about buying a car, a home. That's all gone out the window with two-thirds of renters who are renting, by the way, because home prices are rising at ludicrous speed. But please tell me again how affordability is just a Democrat scam made up to distract all of the peace the tangerine Palpatine has been bringing to this world. At least that's what I assume the CEO of FIFA, maybe his excuse for making up this award that he gave to Bobby Bonespurs so he could finally have his.
Mr. President, this is your prize. This is your peace prize. There is also a beautiful medal for you that you can wear everywhere you want to go.
I'm gonna wear it right now.
Okay.
On behalf of the billions of football loving people from around the world, in recognition of his exceptional and extraordinary actions to promote peace and unity around the world.
This is truly one of the great honors of my life. We saved millions and millions of lives.
But there is no process. There are no other nominees. There was no judging. And of course, the FIFA Council, it was news to the FIFA Council, the governing body.
The only way Kankles McDaco Tits can get a peace prize is by having one of his friends make up an award and then give it to him on stage in front of people. And that is some of the funniest shit I've ever seen. And by some of the funniest shit, I mean Dictator Don getting a fake peace prize happening in the very same week everyone finds out the FBI's Make-A-Wish director wears a women's medium jacket. No joke.
The day after Charlie Kirk's assassination, sources in this report say that Kash Patel flew in to Provo Airport on the FBI jet and then refused to get off until someone provided him with a medium-sized FBI raid jacket. One was found belonging to a female agent and taken to the plane. But then Patel, according to these sources, was displeased by the fact that it didn't have Velcro patches on the upper arms. And so then these agents had to go scurrying around trying to find Velcro patches. Finally, some SWAT raid guys produced them off their own jackets.
I cannot even with these people. It is bad enough that this goblin is spending millions in taxpayer money having a security detail follow his girlfriend wherever she goes, even ordering a SWAT team to chauffeur her to her house if the need should arise. Oh, and then there is the $60 million and counting Americans have paid so far so FBI balls could fly to UFC fights all across this country. So I'm guessing it's just icing on the cake that Vizine Patel fits comfortably into a woman's medium-sized jacket. Just in case anyone was, I don't know, maybe planning on gift-giving this holiday season. Oh, and let's not forget to make sure all the flair is ironed onto the jacket before you wrap it. Because even though the First Lady and her spawn have dual citizenship in Slovenia and the United States, while the Trump regime is currently trying to figure out how to deport people who have dual citizenship back to that other country, it doesn't mean that migration in the United States is going to just stop for any kind of reason. Am I right?
Donald Trump said he plans to, quote, remove anyone who is not a net asset to the United States.
If they can't love our country, we don't want them.
I love the Irish, special people. I really do. I love the Irish.
We're back, Italians. We love the Italians.
Donald Trump's defended wanting immigrants from, quote, nice countries like Denmark and Switzerland.
Refugee admissions into the country right now are essentially at zero, with the exception of Afrikaners fleeing persecution in South Africa.
Oh, so we are stopping migration just for a specific reason, right? Seems like the Pacey Trump regime is looking to flood the United States with other melanin-challenged people like themselves, turning this country's majority demographic back into the hands of colonizing descendants, just as Republican Jesus intended. And wouldn't you know it, thanks to the Somalia given refugee status under Invasion Dawn's current occupation, guess who's going first?
We know that Afghan national is the suspected shooter of these National Guardsmen.
People that shouldn't be in our country, that's right.
So you announced that asylum.
And that includes Somalians and includes plenty of others.
What do the Somalians have to do with this Afghan guy who shot the National?
Nothing, but Somalians have caused a lot of trouble. That's about the only thing. You talk about competence. We have Ilhan Omar, who does nothing but complain about our country and our constitution. And she comes from a country with practically no country. So we're not taking their people anymore. We're not taking their people. And we're getting a lot of their people out because they're nothing but trouble.
Oh yeah, those Somalians, crafty motherfuckers, they get into so much trouble, and especially for America, you know, since the number of non-U.S. citizens in that demographic is just 8% of the total Somali-American population in the entirety of the United States. This entire country, folks, where people from Somalia or Somali descent make up only 0.08% of the entire U.S. population, regardless of the higher concentration of them in states like Ohio, Washington, California, and Minnesota, which is insane when you realize Voldemort is going after a group of people living in the United States whose effect on the general population is statistically insignificant, but since their skin is a darker shade of pale, you gotta get them the fuck out. Not to mention, this blatantly racist argument for deportation is also serving as a way for the Burger King to go after Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz, who made the mistake of being Kamala Harris's running mate in the last presidential election.
On Thanksgiving night, he called Governor Tim Walz, quote, seriously retarded.
Do you stand by that claim of calling Tim Walz retarded?
Yeah, I think there's something wrong with him.
You know, you told me to look into Minnesota and their fraud on visas and their programs. 50% of them are fraudulent, which means that wacko Governor Walz either is an idiot or he did it on purpose. He brought people in there illegally that never should have been in this country, said they were somebody that they're not, fraudulent visa applications, signed up for government programs, took hundreds of billions of dollars from the taxpayers, and we're going to remove them and we're going to get our money back. And we're going to, this next year, make sure that we only put people in leadership positions in this country that love this country and have its back.
You know, it is never not gobsmacking to hear Deportation Barbie talk about American leaders love in this country when it's clear the only thing Puppy Killer Gnome loves is her facelift appointments and Botox. And for those of you in the back, we are still talking about 0.08% of the entire United States population. That's only 221,000 people, out of which a mere 22,000 are not U.S. citizens. The Somali population in Minnesota, by the way, started in the 1990s when Tim Walz was a high school social studies teacher turned football coach. So how any of this could be his fault is beyond me. And that is because I wasn't poorly educated. So as of 2024, there are an estimated 108 people of Somali descent living in Minnesota. And as far as fraudulent visas, the Department of Homeland Embarrassment found only 1,000 cases of potential fraud in Minnesota, leading to, get this, 42 criminal referrals, or 4.2% out of 1,000 potentials. Clearly, Mar-a-Lago face affects Christie's ability to do math, which isn't surprising, but considering her position in the current regime, is also Vecna-level terrifying. Because not only is this aging mannequin head of the department that issues visas to refugees, but she also has no fucking problem defying court orders when it comes to deportation.
Is the administration ending all legal immigration into the United States?
The president is absolutely determined to stop all processes at this point in time from third world countries. And these third world countries don't have stable governments. They can't sustain them. They can't tell us who they are. And that's really the consequence of their governments didn't tell us who they were. We don't have a proper vetting process. So we are going to go through every single person that has a pending asylum claim. They're not here being radicalized and perpetuating dangerous criminal activity against our Americans.
Do you know what the motive was at this point?
You know, we're still going through all of that information, but I will say we believe he was radicalized since he's been here in this country. Anyone who has information on this needs to know that we will be coming after you and we will bring you to justice.
In a filing in federal court this week, the Justice Department said that when the administration was ordered back in March to stop sending detained migrants to a mega prison in El Salvador, you personally made the final call to continue the flights anyway. Is that correct?
The decisions that are made on deportations, where flights go and when they go, are my decision at the Department of Homeland Security.
The judge wanted to ensure that people were given due process. He said very clearly, quote, any plane containing these folks that is going to take off or is in the air needs to be returned to the United States. However that's accomplished, I leave to you. But this is something that you need to make sure is complied with immediately. Did you defy the court's order, Madam Secretary?
No.
Well,
the lie detector determined that was a lie.
Because the planes that were ordered to be turned around to the United States landed in El Salvador despite the judge's orders. In fact, Kilmar Abrego Garcia was one of the victims on those planes ordered to turn around. And we didn't see him back in the United States for a full fucking month. Because that's what defying court orders sounds like. And while we're on the subject of the difference between legal and illegal orders, Punch Drunk Kegsev is in some pretty hot toddy, thanks to being an impotent asshole who can't do a pull-up with the full weight of the Pentagon in his alcoholically numb hands.
Now to the intensifying controversy surrounding Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth over an alleged order to kill everyone on a suspected drug boat and a second strike that targeted survivors. Lawmakers from both parties and legal experts say this could be a war crime.
The Washington Post reported over the weekend that Hegseth ordered a U.S. strike force to, quote, kill everybody on board one vessel in September. And when two survivors were seen in the wreckage, commanders allegedly launched a second, quote, double tap strike to kill them, too.
We have entered the moving the goalpost phase of the Trump administration's response to the fallout from news of a double tap boat strike in the Caribbean.
Pete Hegseth put the blame for the second strike squarely on his commander, Admiral Mitch Bradley, saying on X, I stand by him and the combat decisions he has made on the September 2nd mission and all others since.
Admiral Frank Bradley is overseeing the U.S. military operations in the region, which have killed more than 80 people, despite the administration providing no evidence illegal drugs were on all the boats.
On September 2nd, Secretary Hegseth authorized Admiral Bradley to conduct these kinetic strikes. Admiral Bradley worked well within his authority and the law, directing the engagement to ensure the boat was destroyed and the threat to the United States of America was eliminated.
I watched that first strike live. As you can imagine, at the Department of War, we got a lot of things to do. So I didn't stick around for the hour and 2 hours, whatever, where all the sensitive site exploitation digitally occurs. So I moved on to my next meeting. I did not personally see survivors, but I stand, because the thing was on fire. It was exploded in fire, smoke, you can't see anything, you got digital. This is called the fog of war.
The fog of what?
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Because, yeah, we can say it's the fog of war, but not in the way you think. See, the term fog of war comes from the paraphrased idea of uncertainty, confusion, and a lack of complete information when deciding to take military action, conceived by the Prussian military theorist Karl von Clausewitz in the 1800s. What I think this DUI hire is remembering is playing World of Warcraft when referring to the fog of war, which makes sense because his position in the Pentagon is a fuck lot scarier. And not just because he's throwing Admiral Bradley under the bus for his decision to kill them all, it's also this.
So Secretary Hegseth may very well be pointing the finger at Admiral Bradley, but once again, as the Washington Post reports, it was Hegseth himself who ordered the strike on the survivors of the initial U.S. attack, saying, quote, kill them all. A day later, Hegseth went on Fox News, where he said this about that military operation.
I can tell you that was definitely not artificial intelligence. I watched it live. We knew exactly who was in that boat. We knew exactly what they were doing, and we knew exactly who they represented. And that was Tren de Aragua, a narco-terrorist organization designated by the United States trying to poison our country with illicit drugs.
And then, just a few weeks after that, the defense secretary gathered together America's top generals and commanders, where he told them to ignore the rules of engagement.
We're training warriors, not defenders. We fight wars to win, not to defend. We also don't fight with stupid rules of engagement. We untie the hands of our warfighters to intimidate, demoralize, hunt, and kill the enemies of our country. No more politically correct and overbearing rules of engagement. Just common sense, maximum lethality, and authority for warfighters.
You heard him. G.I. Jokes said that to a room full of military generals on September 30th, just 28 days after he broke the international law of combat and the Pentagon's own armed law of conflict when he told his lackey admiral to strike a boat off the coast of Venezuela. And just for shits and giggles, the Pentagon's armed law of conflict clearly says you can't fire on or strike with missiles anyone who has surrendered, is shipwrecked, or otherwise hors de combat, or out of the fight. Meaning, those two dudes clinging to the debris in this water after their boat and nine of their crew members were blown to smithereens were off limits. And actually, the Triple Sec of War had a duty to protect and care for these men before and during their capture. Instead of committing war crimes and murder, all for the sake of making sure there were no witnesses. Too bad. Arkansas Slender Man Senator Tom Cotton sat in on a meeting between Congress and Admiral Bradley about those strikes. And tell me again, how many exactly were there?
Yeah, I want to thank Admiral Bradley and General Kane for coming to brief about the strikes on September 2nd, which were righteous strikes. These are narco-terrorists who are trafficking drugs that are destined for the United States. The first strike, the second strike, and the third and the fourth strike on September 2nd were entirely lawful and needful, and they were exactly what we'd expect our military commanders to do.
That speedboat that is at the center of so much controversy was actually heading to Suriname in South America, not to the United States. That is actually what the admiral who oversaw this entire operation told lawmakers when he was briefing them on Capitol Hill. U.S. drug enforcement officials say that drugs routed through Suriname are typically headed for Europe, not the United States. And the reason this disconnect matters is because the administration is claiming that this action that they took on this boat with that second strike was necessary to protect this country.
The boat was not hit once. It was not hit twice. It was not hit three times. It was hit four times. Two of those strikes, I'm sure the Secretary of Defense knows,
a little boat,
were to kill the crew and twice more to sink the boat.
Marco Rubio said it was headed to Trinidad. Bradley says Suriname. Trump said the United States. Pete Hegseth has given half a dozen versions of what actually happened and what he knew and when he knew it.
And then there's the whole, was this a drug boat and were those guys drug dealers? Because so far, there is zero evidence that they were. Leaving one thing blatantly obvious, Hennessy Hegseth needs to resign, and Congress needs to use any means necessary to imprison this real American murderer for as long as the law will allow. Because if the Pete of the past, specifically 2016 and 2019, are any indicator of Pete of the future, Air Force Drunk is going to do everything he can to avoid accountability.
And I do think there have to be consequences for abject war crimes. If you're doing something that is just completely unlawful and ruthless, then there is a consequence for that. That's why the military said it won't follow unlawful orders from their commander in chief. There's a standard, there's an ethos, there's a belief that we are above what so many things that our enemies or others would do.
Back in 2019, Hegseth reportedly spent months personally lobbying Trump to pardon multiple U.S. service members who had been accused of war crimes.
If he committed premeditated murder, then Duncan did as well, then yep. I did as well. What do you think you do in war?
Put me in jail then.
Yeah. Put us all in jail.
That's what I'm saying, 2019 Pete. But your 2025 counterpart is really nervous about doing time in federal prison for murdering two people just because he thought he could, by getting rid of the rules of engagement. And just so that we're clear on why all of this is happening, here is Trump's Schmuckretary of Energy telling Fox Not a News Channel that her boss is doing it all for the oil.
So right there, the economy, security, and politically speaking, we're going to be doing a favor to us, to our children, to our economy, to our oil companies, to be able to liberate.
Oops, that bitch just said the quiet part with her entire chest. The boat strikes, the 83 and counting who have been murdered, and the future dead from the land strikes Invasion Dawn is threatening. All of this for the sake of taking Venezuelan oil so American companies can sell it, use it, maybe regift it to their friends. Because this is not about stopping drugs from coming into the United States. Crimes the Clown made that very clear when he did this for a friend serving 45 years for trafficking billions of pounds of the kind of after-school snack Don Jr. has recently become the unofficial mascot for.
The story about this administration being focused on eradicating American society of drugs is absolute BS, because Donald Trump went and pardoned. He's walking free now. The former Honduran president who trafficked 400 tons of cocaine into America. Why did he get to leave prison early? He had a 45-year sentence, which, by the way, Trump administration, number one, prosecuted him because Roger Stone is his buddy and because he wrote Donald Trump a letter calling him Your Excellency and saying that they shared conservative values.
And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. You can follow me and the show on social media, and we are always available for your listening pleasure wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Tadir for now.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
These are difficult times, and if you believe in justice, progress, and democracy, the news you read and listen to can be pretty depressing. And that's why there's a new podcast called Good News for Lefties and America. Every day it features positive news stories for progressive listeners. Because no matter how disturbing the headlines might be, there's always hope we can build on for a better tomorrow. Good News for Lefties and America. Listen on this platform at goodnewsforlefties.com or wherever podcasts are heard.